Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. It's Timbo here. Sorry that we haven't had an episode out in over a week. I try to make sure that that never happens, but there is a situation happening at the moment that means that, unfortunately, we can't record together right now, which we can't tell you about, but we will when we can, I promise. Right now, though, what I have for you is a little flashback from a different podcast that Guy and I were on. This is from Cult Popture, who are our mates, AJ and Richard. They do a fantastic film podcast. And on that, they do a whole bunch of different stuff. One of the things they do is film franchise fortnights. And every fortnight, they look at a different film franchise from woe to go. They cover everything from Godzilla to Godfather. And what you're about to listen to is this crazy project they did where they watched all 37 films in the Barbie franchise and then released an 18-hour long episode talking about all of them. They've got a ton of special guests. So what I'm about to play for you is into the fifth hour when Guy and I got on. Obviously, we've got links in the show notes so that you can go and subscribe to their podcast, and I'll put a link in there specifically for that monstrous Barbie episode as well. That's the what we watched is the 12th Barbie film called Barbie Mariposa. And if you enjoyed this clip, check out this show. Over the last 6 years, they've covered about 150 different film franchises and talked about 650 plus movies. Insane. Got all their links and their socials and stuff in the show notes, so you can check that out. Without further ado, though, enjoy a little slice of the boys on someone else's podcast for a change. This is Cult Popture.
Were we meant to be recording that?
Ignore him.
Very funny. Yeah, very good.
I am a crack up. Okay, I'll stop. I'll be the fourth person, so you guys are in charge, and I'll try and disrupt the flow.
All right, now we're here with a nice tall glass of G&T. We've got Guy and Tim from The Worst Idea of All Time.
Thank you.
Welcome along.
We were speculating, is G&T a common nickname for the two of you together?
What I was about to say, never have I heard it upon my ears. Tim.
Really? We've had it on the Friend Zone, I think, once or twice, which is our episodes of our podcast where we just read fan mail and everyone tries to come up with a new nickname for us as a duo. But it needs to take off, and I tipped my hat at you two, Richard and Alex, for getting people into it.
Yeah, RNA, rest and aneurysm, or some other such thing.
RA is a aren't they something at a university?
Yeah, residential advisor.
Very cool. Almost as punk rock as a gin and tonic.
Always the coolest dude in the halls of residence is the person 1 year older who decided to stick around to make sure everyone's familiar with the lay of the land.
Or you could have done like AR, like an augmented reality thing, or like AR Rahman who write Jaho for Slumdog Millionaire.
No, rest and aneurysm. I want you to be on a holiday and then die suddenly.
Who's that?
I just want to say, I think we haven't really done a lot of G&T because at least I always mentally categorize us as Tim and Guy. Mm. I always think it's Tim and Guy. It's to my eyes, never Guy and Tim.
I don't have an order in my head.
All right.
I have to do it. Every time I write it down, it's a different journey.
Yeah, exciting. I had to write down, remember to make a G&T joke, because in my head it's just so Tim and Guy. And when this comes out, I will have, it was a few days ago now, but I thought of, I was like, yeah, up next we got Tim and Guy, G&T, and I was like, fuck, I have to say that to them.
But, I'm glad you did.
Everyone will have just heard that minutes ago.
Oh, wow. Of course, because we are part of one greater podcasting odyssey. This is not some sort of independent episode that people can plug and play. We're on the way.
They have to really look for this.
Yeah.
we're just shy of 5 hours through by my count. I'm editing it as we go. And we're not even half, I think film 18 is our halfway mark.
Yeah.
Because Tim and I dabbled in long form podcasting before, and Tim, I remember at some point when you uploaded our longest episode, 5 Hour Energy, it sort of ate all the bandwidth on the...
Yeah.
It did something
right.
Which meant that we couldn't
upload... I
had to upload
the quality.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot.
There was some sort of fantastic technical issue that made it impossible to either
Looking
upload
to
more content after the fact. Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to for you guys.
Yeah, well, and because we're on the same podcast network, so it could end up having a flow-on effect for you guys.
We were on a different platform back in the day.
I see.
Yeah. This is a horrifying amount of non-Barbie content to kick this off. Can I say that?
I imagine for all parties involved, it's a welcome respite. I watched Barbie Mariposa at about 2 p.m. today, and within 5 minutes...
Mariposa.
Yeah, I didn't ask any questions of Tim or AJ or Richard. I didn't want to know why I was watching it, but 5 minutes in, I thought, "What? Why am I here?"
So you were quite cold on the movie. This is a G&T over ice.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, usually on your guys' podcast where, like, you watch all these wonderful movies that you deeply enjoy.
That's right.
Not over ice.
Well, yeah. not all movie podcasts have to be built around bad media, but that's a lesson you guys will learn as you get further and further into the podcasting sphere.
And that is starting to catch up with me. My flatmate the other day, while I was watching Barbie and Mariposa, said to me, "Is this worth it?" And I was like, "Oh, what do you mean?" And he was like, is how funny the idea is that overriding how much work?"
I don't think to the average person that would require any explanation. You saying, "What do you mean?" is sensationally funny to me. That is a question from someone who has lost their mind and any perspective.
And also, the point at which other people are asking you if it's worth it is usually when you're knocking on the door of something brilliant.
Noted, because my answer was, "Oh, when we first started, it was pretty funny, but we're not even halfway through, and I was awake at 4 a.m. last night thinking about Barbie, and I was like, oh my god,
this is so good." I recently read a Sir Edmund Hillary quote, which was, "It's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves."
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
beautiful.
That's good and applicable for Barbie Mariposa.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what he was thinking of when he said
also
it.
Also known as Mariposa and her butterfly fairy friends, or Barbie Fairytopia Mariposa.
Great tagline or subheading, whatever you want to call it. I got to say, I took me a while to wrap my head around the animation style, but story-wise, I was not entirely furious with what happened. I kind of wound up enjoying myself quite a lot.
Well, yeah. That's good.
Would you believe that the animation has improved significantly since the start of the podcast?
When did this come out?
It's a great
this was
question.
2008.
Huh.
Toy Story came out in 1995.
Yeah. Should we see what other 2008 animated films were?
Well, like, should we also describe the style?
It's not
people.
Like Mattel doesn't have the capital to
hire some decent animators
to make things slightly more palatable.
The interesting thing, not everything, just because it's under the Mattel umbrella doesn't mean it's going to get
that Mattel sheen.
That Mattel sheen on it. Like, Disney is the opposite of this.
For context, what Disney were doing at the time was Bolt, John Travolta, Miley Cyrus film about a dog who thinks he has superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
Was that under Pixar's umbrella?
No, that's just Disney. That was the umbrella, the studio that would later make Frozen, Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah.
Steve Jobs didn't have his grubby little fruit-loving hands on that one.
I'm looking at the art now, and it is
for Bolt.
Decades, if not centuries ahead of what we were dealing with over in the Barbie Mariposa universe.
So for context, the first Barbie movie we watched, Barbie in the Nutcracker, came out a few months after Shrek released, and every single critical response to Barbie in the Nutcracker was like, "Oh, this looks pretty bad compared to Shrek," which by today's standard does not look very good, you know, as good as movies these days. And so we've talked a lot already on the five previous hours of this episode about comparisons to Shrek and Toy Story and things. I think a couple movies ago I made the comparison that Barbie movies look more like the proof of concept pre-render that they send to their investors to be like, this is somewhat what the movie will look like.
Yeah. Guy and I have only watched a couple movies that are worse than Barbie Mariposa, and they have been specifically selected by our Patreon supporters for their horrific visuals.
Yeah. Food Fight, the 2012 Food Fight, animated film, comes to mind as an example of also like the sort of pre-release render that you're like, it's going to be good. Just give us another couple of months.
No, it's out this afternoon. And give us what you have.
Also, what was that Christmas film
we
watched?
I was trying to remember. It was the something kids. It's like a famously...
13th Street Kids or something.
Oh, man, that's close. It's something like that. It is an incredible piece of cinema, which I know we're not here to talk about, but it's we'll see if we can figure out what that is to name check it on this pod, because it is
so
worth checking
check
out.
It out.
Honestly, you should. It's worthwhile.
Rhapsody Street Kids.
Rhapsody Street. Oh, fuck! It's scary. When you fast,
you got to look, if you're listening along, it's worth pausing to look up the animation style for Rhapsody Street Kids, because it is like, it's beyond even anything that you would have dealt with so far,
it's
and what we
nightmare.
Just watched. It's uniquely
Barbie Mariposa, though, when it started, really threw me off. It's like you said, it gets some, literally does take some getting used to, because it's very jarring at the start how shit it is. But I was surprised at how quickly my brain was like, "All right, this is the world we're in."
Yeah, and because it's also the world and the story's told by a Barbie character to some
we
sort of...
We can explain that, yeah.
Some, oh my God, please do.
Yeah, now this is actually a very interesting piece of world building here. Yeah. So we've already seen three Fairytopia movies. So there's a few different subcat. There's the Fairytopia umbrella, and so Fairytopia had two direct sequels. And... a lot of these films, especially the earlier ones, start with modern-day Barbie telling a story to her niece, Kelly. And she she says, like, oh, here's this, like, Kelly's insecure about something, and she tells her the story of the Nutcracker to boost her self-esteem. And this one takes a new spin on that and features Alina, who was the main character of Fairytopia, telling a story to Bibble, her fluffy sidekick, about Mariposa, who was one of the butterfly fairies.
I'm happy to hear that, because I thought it was an unnecessary wrapper for what was otherwise a pretty engaging story. And to the point that after she'd started telling the story and we were immersed in the world of the story she was telling, when it pulled out to be like, that's right, we're not in real time right now, we're in a flashback or whatever, I was like, I don't need to be reminded of that. I was happily enjoying myself. It sort of ties into a frustration I was going to say before, which was, or like the immediate difficulty of wrapping my head around the world we were in, is how like unambitious and plain and simple, like the backgrounds of all of the animations are so bland. It's like one color palette with a few deviations of, you know, animation design or whatever. But it actually, it pretty quickly, once you get past it, it works in its favor, because you're like, you are just left dealing with the story or whatever, or like, you know, the immediate action of the scenes. And it's a very plain story, but they do a pretty good job of it. It clips along.
There's nothing to distract you.
It's tidy. There's nothing to distract you. And I didn't really...
It's a classic story of power and royals and poison.
There's a real strong Cinderella undercurrent that runs through Barbie Mariposa.
This is the most positive I've ever heard you guys talk about a movie. I've listened to a lot of your podcast, and this is the brightest dispositions I've ever heard the two of you talk about a film.
It's important to bear in mind, we haven't spent five previous hours discussing the cinematic universe of Mattel's Barbie.
Something I'm unable to comprehend at this point.
Yeah. As someone who literally is just dipping in and out. I mean, the luxury of the vision that I have. I, you know, until you highlighted that, I don't think I've experienced the world of what it is for a guest to appear on our podcast and be like, well, you guys are fucking idiots, but I thought it was okay. See ya.
Richard, what is the plot of this movie?
Well, I was going to, if you guys want to explain this, because we've been...
Richard, here is the plot of this movie.
Thank you. We've been explaining plots of movies for 5 hours. It's time someone else, except for the breaks we've already taken.
The opening shot is on Burble, who is a fairy creature.
A puffball is the official. Yeah.
And is that canon? This is a creature that exists beyond this film? Okay.
Correct.
And Bibble gets absolutely wrecked while trying to juggle some nuts for the bemusement of one of the fairies, whose name I can't remember.
Alina.
Yeah.
And Alina's the little one, right?
No. Alina is the Barbie, the main fairy.
Alina's the narrator, and Bibble is the mischievous puffball to whom she tells the story.
Okay.
And so the story is basically there was a land called Flutterfield, and it's inhabited by fairy Barbies, and it's just everyone is like a perfectly formed Barbie figure, and they've got wings.
They're butterfly wings, though, which is important to distinguish from the normal fairy wings.
And they live inside of, in some sort of enclave, and they live in fear of the Skeezites, who I actually immediately found myself empathizing with and siding with. The Skeezites are cast as kind of, not the villains, but like the villainous henchmen of the film.
I am shocked by that. They were so scary. They want to eat the film's protagonists.
I felt like I was watching a Planet Earth film and I finally had permission to root for the Predator. I was go ahead, please, AJ.
I think it's important to describe, for those who haven't seen the film, which will be almost everyone listening, what these Skeezites look like, because I think that is crucial to why they're so scary.
Everybody's seen The Matrix. You know Sentinels? They're Sentinels. Yeah. But in the Barbie fairy kingdom.
Yeah.
They're these flying, quite disgusting-looking, kind of human-faced monsters that are kind of spherical, and they rock around. They're allergic to light. They cannot exist in the light.
They're not allergic. They just don't like it.
No, they can't be in it. They like can't. They can't exist in the light.
As the movie goes on, you see them in the light, and they're like, "Oh no, light!"
And they have to bail.
According to the Barbie Wiki, they cannot stand to be near lights. Is the official?
It's not like it actually causes them any. There are no ill effects. It's not like they disintegrate. It's not like a
vampire. I thought they got harmed by it.
No,
I thought it definitely was.
No, it's like this. Light, my one weakness. And then they just fucking skeeve off into the night to be hungry for another decade.
The only other thing we know about them really is that they eat the fairies are called something.
We don't even know if they eat the
butterfly fairies.
All they want to do is eat the butterfly fairies. I did not see a single butterfly fairy being consumed in this film.
Was there not a recounting of that's too horrific to put in a kids' movie. But just the idea of them was so scary that they're these like freaky, horrible looking mobby creatures that just go around and go, "Oh, I'm hungry. I want to eat the cute flying girls." And then the cute flying girls are like, "Well,
we're
fucked." And they were fucked for ages until their queen figured figured out that the Skeezites, is it what they're called? Skeezites hate light, and then like turned all the lights on these flowers.
But it was ridiculous, really. Basically,
they installed her as queen.
These are these fairy Barbies. They live in like a village amongst some sort of plant. And by day, they were free to do as they pleased. And then at night, when it would become dark, the Skeezites would come in and they'd be hungry. And mostly their hunger would manifest by them saying they were hungry, but never eating anything. And then some fucking. Some bright spark came in and was like, "Hey, I've got this power where bang, all these flowers are alight." And the Skeezites were just pushed to the fringes of society. They were left with nothing to eat, ostracized by the entire Barbie community. There was no, negotiation about,
You're out of your mind. We're dealing with murderers.
Not, no.
I really like calling them the Barbie community and not the fairy community. I really enjoy that this species are actually butterfly Barbies and not butterfly fairies.
You're in over your fucking head, mate. They're Barbies. Like, I don't need these specs. I also read on the Wikipedia page that this film is not canon in the Barbie Fairytopia.
What? According to whom?
The author of the Wikipedia page.
In the sense that it's like a story within the Fairytopia, because the Fairytopia universe is wrapped up now. This was just their way of continuing it.
It's so
the 12th
funny.
Entry in the Barbie and the fourth installment of the Barbie Fairytopia series, but it's not a canon sequel to the previous films.
Isn't it so funny that that's important?
Well, it's not canon in the sense that it's a story being retold. I think it's still possible this happened within the universe of Fairytopia, but not necessarily. Mm. Maybe it's like embellished or
it's Fantastic
like that.
Beasts to Harry Potter. Is that what you're telling me?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Basically the Barbie fairies, they live in fear of the Skeezites. The Skeezites are these really wonderful, affable creatures who are just a little bit
They're
hungry.
Horrible.
And basically there's the queen is becoming ill, and as she becomes ill, her light dims, and her light is the light that illuminates all of the flowers that keeps the Barbie fairy community safe. And there's a Cinderella type figure who's Mariposa. And she's got a day job. She's a bit of a daydreamer. She's not afraid of the Skeezites in the way that the others are.
She doesn't love a party, but her friend does.
Yeah. The Barbie Wiki describes her as reticent, which I thought was an interesting word for the Barbie Wiki to know.
I think just to be reticent to something.
Socially reticent, but also like quite an open-minded explorer when measured against the rest of the insular community.
Yeah. It also mentions half a dozen times that she loves books above all else.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do bring
that
up a lot in the movie.
That scene where she fucks the book was incredible.
Did not expect that.
Yeah. And graphic. Rendered as it was in that sort of glitchy animation style, I found it hard to immerse myself in. But once I bought in, I was all the way in.
Fantastic. Mm.
That's what the book said. The main kind of thrust of the series, speaking of fucking, I guess, is where my mind didn't realize that's where I was getting thrusting from until I committed to the metaphor. But speaking of thrusting, the main thrust of the story is that Mariposa is trying to find the antidote to save Mirabella?
Mirabella, the queen.
The queen Mirabella.
Before the light runs out, and you find out there's like a royal uprising happening where someone's trying
there
to take
a coup.
Over the kingdom.
Yeah, there is a coup attempt involving poison. It's very cool.
The queen
involves her chief advisor and some woman.
The queen's got a very trustworthy and beloved assistant who it turns out has sourced some sort of mythical poison and is using her closeness to the queen to poison the queen with eyes to overthrowing the monarchy and assuming control. And the queen's son, the prince, who is the sort of the apple of everyone's eye.
Carlos.
So, Mariposa has to serve these two sort of... Mariposa is a Cinderella-type figure, and she serves these two ugly stepsister-type characters, these twins who are very rude and dismissive and sort of inconsiderate towards Mariposa's humanity. And eventually... They desire the prince, and eventually Mariposa incidentally runs into the prince one night. She fumbles her book into him, and he saves the book and comes back, and they're reading the same book, and it's a very sweet moment. And then he's sort of like, oh, I can't really talk right now, but there's stuff happening.
Because I'm a prince.
Yeah, Prince Carlos. There's Spain exists in this universe,
Spain
by the way.
Spain exists in this universe, so does Russia. Because the two sisters who are kind of the ugly stepsister equivalents, to borrow from the Cinderella.
Yeah, but rest assured they're not ugly. They're both absolute smoke shows. And I had to pause the movie twice to masturbate to completion to enjoy their company.
This was after the book scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a sticky afternoon. So Carlos is Spanish. The two sisters are
Eastern
Russian.
European or Russian.
Eastern Bloc, maybe Soviet. We're not too sure. Pretty much everyone else is either American or British. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we know, people in positions of authority but not absolute authority are British.
Yeah.
And absolute emperors are American.
And protagonists are American.
Yes.
Protagonists are American. Yeah, people who are close to power but not in power are British and yes. Everyone else is... it's not really relevant.
It's a common, it's a kids movie trope. Mm.
This does bring up an interesting point for the podcast that I can't imagine will interest either of you, G&T. But this is the first Barbie movie where the main protagonist is not voiced by Kelly Sheridan.
Yeah, who, as you'll know, has voiced the Barbie character up until this point.
I actually did know that. I absolutely knew that.
But because they often have, so Barbie will tell the story, and then it's kind of like Barbie is inserting herself into the story, so she's playing the main character. Whereas this one, Kelly Sheridan voices Alina in the opening, in the kind of bookend of the film. But then Mariposa is voiced by Chiara Zani, who voiced Barbie's enemy Raquel in the Barbie Diaries.
Ah,
that's where I knew her from.
but then in this, there's a sequel to Mariposa, and Kelly Sheridan just voices her then. But also something to look forward to in that sequel. So on the Barbie Wikipedia page for the character of Mariposa, there's the kind of like the character history. She appears in two films. So for her adventure in this film, Mariposa and her butterfly fairy friends, there's 190 words written. For her adventures in the sequel, there's a full 3,494 words, 10 pages long, about what she gets up to in Mariposa and whatever this sequel is called.
A testament to the clarity and succinctness of the story here. And before we continue recounting the plot, which I enjoyed, I just want to know, like, relative to the movies you've seen so far, even hearing you talk about it makes me feel sick for how immersed you are in this Barbie universe. How did you guys find, separate from plot and story, whatever, and, like, you know, the different people voicing different characters, how did you find the viewing experience inside of this film, watching Barbie Mariposa?
Like, how does it rank with the other Barbie movies?
Yeah, whatever measurable you want, but just, like, was it, were you happier than usual? Were you sadder than usual? Were you defeated?
Well, I'm glad you asked, actually, because so what happened was I put this film on and it starts with like a bunch of unsubtitled bibble dialogue, and then you're introduced to this character who we've seen multiple times, but you guys obviously haven't, and then launching into another protagonist. And so the four of us have collaborated before. We did a podcast on the 2017 film 9/11, starring Charlie Sheen and Whoopi Goldberg. And in it was that we had organized with Tim that the four of us would do this. And Guy, you were kind of just told to go along with it, and you were pretty sour on the whole experience. And I got so much joy watching Mariposa, knowing, like, just imagining you lying in bed with a laptop on your chest, just being like, fuck! And so, like, anytime there would be something that would, like, dive into the deep Fairytopia lore, I got so much joy out of watching that. And it saved me from what I imagine could have been quite a trough in my enjoyment of Barbie movies. Oh, although, having said that, the next film we're going to be talking about is the best one.
So, can I just, in summation then, Guy asked you, how did you find watching this film? And your answer was, pretty good, because I know you would have been fucking hating it at the time.
Yeah. I had a great time knowing that you would suffer.
Provide that hypothetical service. Little did you know, I set up a laundry cycle perfectly in synchronicity with the movie.
Wow.
And so I was like, you know, when this movie finishes, I'm going to hang out that laundry.
High point
and,
of the day.
Yeah, and I felt, and that made me feel really good.
You foiled again.
And I had a really good cup of tea. And I was like,
that's actually an unbeatable combination.
Yeah.
Syncing up the time of a laundry load and having a really cracking
also
cup
like
of tea.
An hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. Fuck, that's a cakewalk. You got to be kidding me. That's not gonna upset me.
You think that's going to even leave a dent in our heart? I think not.
AJ, how did you find it? Like, against the other films, I mean, are you buying in? The more you immerse yourselves, are you getting further and further in? Or are you sort of finding yourself detached and observing as an external person?
You have to immerse yourself, I think, in any film, or else why are you doing a podcast about bad movies. But the I did have to pause it about 20 minutes in to have a nap because I was so bored that I couldn't keep my eyes open, which is the first of the Barbie episode that I've had to watch in two parts. So that's, you know, good innings so far. In terms of ranking it with the other Barbie movies, this is better than Barbie Fairytopia 3. It's not as good as Barbie Fairytopia 2, which is the best Barbie movie.
I feel like I'm in a parody of, you know, life when I hear you ranking it amongst the Barbie Fairytopia series. I feel physically ill.
I agree. Yeah, me too. because I think, I was editing what we've got so far in this episode yesterday, and hearing how passionate I was talking about Barbie in the Island Princess, I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is inside. This is so niche. I'm inside this bubble where Barbie is extremely important. And it's very hard to get out of that, especially when you're watching so many in a row. Like, we're watching one a day to get to make our...
doesn't come out for a month.
Because can I say, when I started watching it, I realized that it's not my first immersion in like the Barbie animated universe, and that I live with my partner, and my partner has a daughter, and I've occasionally when we're sort of trying to burn time, if you're exhausted and you just need to get through an hour, you know, like sometimes
your laundry's
you're
on,
and
you
got
to do something to kill the time.
You're winding down the clock. That's right. And I was on the kids' version of Netflix, scrolling through the options, presenting them to this child, and I said, what one would you like? And this was before she even knew what she was choosing. She was just basing it on an image. And she chose a Barbie television show, and it was one where Barbie is this, she's a teenager, and she lives in a really lovely home with her parents and her younger sister. And the parents and younger sister are going away on a family holiday during school holidays, and she is staying at the house to do her first summer job at like a Wet n Wild type aquatic theme park. And I watched it, and this must be after 2008 because the animation was crisp and everything.
Yeah.
But some part of that, like, I didn't enjoy it, and I thought it was very vapid, and like we watched the whole episode, and I thought it was really bad, and I didn't like that I'd put it on for this person. And like that, we, you know, that this was I don't want to use her name, not that anyone cares, but it's interesting because I was like, I didn't like that this is the sort of material that's catered to get a child to watch a program and to keep watching it. And it happens on YouTube as well, where sometimes the only show that really she has licensed to watch is Peppa Pig, but sometimes she'll click through and start watching these weird, like, toy unwrapping videos and all this shit. And it's when you get into that
slippery
stuff
slope,
where it's like they're just feeding colors and stuff and noises, you sort of like, I don't like the way that, you know, everything's streamlined to just keep people engaged without actually considering what's going in. And so the way that the story was told and the moral of the story and the message, I actually really enjoyed. Like, I felt like it was serving a higher purpose than just being an hour and 15 minutes in the company of the fairy Barbies, because it was like there was value underwriting this, which was like, you know, coming to terms with yourself and accepting your differences from other people. And also, like, all of the characters, apart from the villains, softened towards one another and showed emotional growth and development, which was so far beyond what, you know, when you sit down to watch Barbie Mariposa at 2 o'clock on a summer afternoon.
Trying to kill the queen.
Yeah, well,
she remain evil.
She was a villain, but that's fine. Like, that's what you expect of villains. But like the Barbie character experienced personal growth and grew, developed self confidence. Like the two beautiful stepsisters,
she became less reticent.
Yeah, that's right. And the two beautiful sisters to whom I couldn't help but frequently pause and masturbate to, also. Like their humanity.
Did that throw you off your laundry cycle?
No, I'm a very quick masturbator.
He factored that into the cycle.
There were no tissue papers or loose bits of cloth around, and I just found myself masturbating into the washing machine.
It cleans itself.
No cleanup. Really efficient.
Whites are whiter.
But the thing is,
I hope you had it on a cold wash.
Yeah, it was on cold wash. Even these characters. It was on the coldest setting. Even these characters experienced some sort of personal growth or development. Like, they went from being these sort of outlandish, dismissive villains to understanding the empathy and humanity of this person who worked for them. And I was like,
I'm really interested in how god awful this first Barbie movie was that you watched.
The Barbie TV show.
It's a low bar.
Is that Barbie Life in the Dream House or Barbie Dream House Adventures? Because they are different.
This is important.
I think it was Life in the Dream House.
Right.
It's one where she works, as I say, it's less of a Wet n Wild, more of a Sea World. I'm pretty sure there are dolphins there.
Probably. That
which
does
is a whole
sound
other
like something
kettle of ethics.
And Barbie.
Yeah.
I understand what you mean with the message of the film is good, is essentially what you're saying.
There's 36 other ones if you want us to send them to you, Guy.
And
to show this
exactly.
person.
This is the 12th time in a row I've seen more or less this lesson communicated through poorly rendered CGI Barbie dolls. So I get it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. But in terms
isn't it
of,
ironic that you've absorbed this message 12 times that you can't forgive the poor rendering on these CGI Barbie? When will you learn that the imperfections is what makes them perfect?
You're right.
Tim's shaking his head at me.
I don't know about that.
Can I talk about something I thought was funny at the end of this movie?
On your own 5-hour podcast, permission granted.
5 hours? I wish. What do we work out the other day? It's probably going to be about 15.
Minimum, I think, 15. Probably closer to like...
Well, I'm sure that's a heartening thing for the listener to hear at this juncture.
I mean, well, they'll know.
Yeah, look at... You open iTunes and you have a flick around and you see Tim Ferriss with a 45-minute conversation on how to make your life better. And you see a Joe Rogan Experience. Oh, it's 3 hours, but he's got a really good guest. So, oh, maybe. And then you see Colt Popsch's 15-hour escapades into the Barbie cinematic universe.
Colt Popsch, who once scratched the bottom of the top 200 movie and TV podcasts in Barbados.
Wow.
That's the best stat we've received. If you,
this might be just the thing to push you over the top over there in, you know, beautiful Barbados.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
At the end of the movie, there's sort of like a trial where they've got to get the antidote for the poison, and there's like this gauntlet where each of the four characters, one is left behind as the other one marches forward, which, you know, is a trope I've seen in plenty of movies like this. So I was like, sweet, I understand it. What's your name? Mariposa, the title character, gets to the last stage, and the fairy that's guiding her there is like, it's the sky full of stars, and she goes, you have to pick the right star. It's like a end of Last Crusade kind of Holy Grail situation where she has to pick the right star that'll be the antidote, but there's hundreds of stars, and it's like, and like during this time her reflection from the like the chamber, the gauntlet that they've been going through, is like evil and has been saying like whispering bad things and telling her she's not good enough,
all of her insecurities.
Yeah, exactly. And so she's looking at all these stars stars, and she's like, oh, which one do I choose? And then she looks over at the Archer constellation, which was brought up earlier in the film, and she looks across, and the Archer is pointing towards a lone star in like a relatively large sort of just sea of blackness, and she's like, that one's all on its own. And the reflection goes, yeah, it's just a meaningless star, it means nothing. And it's like, like this is clearly the star that is clearly delineated up there, and like without even knowing about the Archer constellation, without even having that established, it's still like an arrow made out of stars pointing to a single star in the middle of nothing, and it's treated like, you know, only Mariposa with the lessons she's learned along the way, with the yeah. adventures she's just been on, only then was she able to choose the right star, and it's like, this is clear to anyone.
No, you say that, but who are the? What are the names of the sisters? Because basically, Mariposa picks up. There are three other people who she goes on this adventure with to retrieve the antidote that can, you know.
Rainer and Rayla.
Rainer and Rayla, and then four. What was the name of the bunny?
Zinzi.
By the way, I loved Zinzi. Zinzi is like Zinzi. All Zinzi wants is Fluttercorn. They use Fluttercorn to negotiate with Zinzi, who's this weird bunny. And Fluttercorn appears to be a very thinly veiled metaphor for meth. Like, I mean, everything about ZZ's relationship to Fluttercorn is that of a meth addict who wants meth. It's like as soon as they know that it's in the picture, it's all they think about, it's all they talk about, it's all they ask for.
They will do unspeakable things and really compromise themselves for a hit.
Yeah,
but delicious Fluttercorn.
And like it just keeps bringing up Fluttercorn. Even when they're on the adventure and they're all past the Fluttercorn stage, it's like, oh, how about we get some Fluttercorn? You know what really kick things off? Some Fluttercorn. Hey, guys, I'm feeling pretty flat. You got any more of that Fluttercorn? But basically, the three of them are sidekicks on this journey from our post. And I know that you say it like you dismiss it offhandedly that, you know, the single star that the Archer is pointing to is the most obvious choice. But not to the adventurers that Mariposa is with. Right. Neither of the sisters, ZZ. Like, the sisters, it's pretty heavily emphasized, would probably choose the most obvious, immediately shiny star that burns brightest. ZZ would probably choose
the one that looks like Fluttercorn.
That's right. And of the four adventurers, Mariposa is the only one who would be able to identify, who's so enamored by the Archer.
Because she's into astronomy. It's weird. She loves reading and she loves astronomy, and the movie does, like, you know, take a lot of opportunities to remind us of those two facts. And credit where it's due, that's good storytelling to lead us to the end point where you need book smarts and a knowledge of the night sky to pick the right choice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
If we want to talk about scary characters, for me, it was not the Skeezites. The Skeezites were the heroes of the film. And
so
I would
scary.
Love to see, I'd love to spend some more time in the universe, the Skeezite universe.
So
and, you know, actually
terrifying.
See what makes them tick. Because they don't have an easy life, by any accounts. You know, I understand this movie is told from the Barbie's perspective, and so immediately they're cast aside as the villains. But these
can
are
I,
just...
Can I just pause you for 1 second? The only children's movie character I can think of that would rival them for scariness...
is the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Nope, fuck that shit. Return to Oz, are they called the Wheelies?
They're like the Room of Heads. Because that's freaking
no, the
that
fucking those guys who are like on one wheel. I think they're called wheelies or something like that.
Heelies?
They
just have wheels on their heels.
Yeah,
the and
heelies.
Shoes.
You know what? Now I think about them, they're just kids on heels.
I was thinking of a shoe fad. But the Skeezites, I made my peace with next year, wound up rooting for. But the what was it called? The Sea Beast?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. No, you're right. Oh, I forgot about the sea beast.
That was a scary motherfucker. The sea beast was hungry as all hell.
Yeah.
And and there were these two sort of Californian mermaids they came across who were sort of equivalents of those sisters, the Russian sisters, who were so casual. But, yeah, the sea beast, I was like, that's scary. Skeebites are funny.
To bring it locally, I actually thought the sea beast somewhat resembled like traditional Taniwha depictions. Because it's got like sort of the like koru shapes like creating its face, and I was like, it's a Taniwha, and then it did what I'm to understand the legends say a Taniwha does, which is chase Barbie dolls through the water.
That's right.
I thought the sea beast, it's a fish that lives at the very bottom of the ocean. It's got like
the
a
anglerfish,
homing
yeah.
device. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was inspired by the anglerfish.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Sea Beast was scary, but not nearly as scary as those Z-Zites.
Skeezites.
You're mixing up
Zinzi. You don't even know what they're called.
What a creature that would be.
I don't know what they're called. I don't know what they're called, but their image is burned into my brain. I will have nightmares about
it. It's scary because the limitations of the animation make it scarier. Mm. Like it's the best they could design a, you know, the script probably described them as like a winged creature, and it's like, all right, and they've got kind of the dumb personality of like Ed from Ed, Ed and Eddie, right? So they like took all these things and did the best they could. I bet a drawing of Skeezites is less scarier than a 3D rendering of them.
You know? There's an uncanny valley aspect to them where they look like ugly humans' faces that are just like flying through the air trying to eat beautiful creatures, and that's not cool, man.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty fucking terrifying if you ask me.
That's really not on Barbie Mariposa.
Really, is there?
Think about faces just rolling around on a sphere.
I just can't believe I'm the only one who's in it with the Skeezites here.
They tried to sell them for comedy, though.
I actually thought their design was pretty funny.
They were comedy characters.
Yeah, I thought, it was a little disarming. I thought these could be scary for little children. The humor side of them really disarmed them for me.
I just couldn't get away from the fact that they were there to eat.
That's incredibly high stakes for these movies.
It's super high. Because tell me about Barbie's enemy in the other Barbie movie. You mentioned that she had like an actual enemy in real life.
The Barbie Diaries is like completely different to any of these films. It's my favorite so far.
It's the worst one.
It's tearing the podcast in half.
A gritty character study.
Most people rank it as the worst one. But actually the next one, which I've already watched, we'll talk about that in a second, is even better. But the Barbie Diaries is set like in our world. And it's the animation style is slightly different. They're kind of trying to embrace the fact that it's lower quality and it's a more kind of like cel shaded design.
Oh, that's good. Do that.
Yeah, and it's
it looks worse, Tim. I assure you. It looks so much worse.
It's like a Mean Girls kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's set like in a high school, and so I enjoyed not seeing her be a princess. But evidently, that was too much of a change for everyone else.
No one's trying to eat all the characters in the Barbie Diaries, though. I'll give it that.
I'm looking at some imagery from the Barbie Diaries movie now, and it is equally, if not more, terrifying to me. It looks like
Raquel from the Barbie Diaries is scarier than the Skeezites.
Can you buy the Skeezites as toys, like the tie-in merchandise?
No, the tie-in merchandise for this one is pretty light, although this is the first one I've seen that sells like the doll of the main character with the DVD as like a multi-pack, and I thought that was like such a
time. The Skeezites I'm imagining is sort of like plush cushions that you put on your couch or whatever, and I am just imagining how they can... Like, what stitching technique they can use to render the faces as blotchy and sort of poorly as they are represented in the film.
That is
and also
true.
They should have one of those buttons in the middle of them where when you squeeze it right, it'll say, I'm hungry for Barbie fairies, or, you know,
oh my God.
British. But.
No, you say that, but, like, at least 50% of the movies we've watched so far have, like, a Cockney British villain character who talks like this. Yeah.
And then a real snidely, snivelly British character who talks like this.
They go off and on. Every second one will have at least one of those characters. And that used to be a voice trope, a character trope I enjoyed, and now I don't want to see it anymore. Because
I enjoyed it then. I loved your voice work. I felt like I was watching a read-through for Oliver Twist.
This here says they are Henna's minions.
Henna is the bad guy of the film.
Is she in control of all of them, the Skeezites?
Somehow she kind of is.
That's crazy.
I think it's because she's like, as soon as I'm in power and all the lights go out, you got free reign on all these.
Barbie's got a real fucking thing for brunettes, eh? I don't know what brunette hurt the creator of the Barbie universe, but all blondes are good and brunettes are trying to kill the queen.
Yeah.
It seems like a real consistent thing.
It's because there's only two hair colors in the Barbie universe, so you got to differentiate between them.
Fun fact about Mariposa. She's the only Barbie character with brown eyes.
That is a fun fact.
Very fun.
Do you know,
quite telling.
Do you know who invented the Barbie doll?
Barbara.
Barbara
Roberts.
Barbara doll.
No,
Barbara doll.
Barbara was the daughter.
No, it was a woman named Ruth Handler.
Oh, yeah.
She modeled it on her daughter, and her daughter famously fucking hated them.
Well, it says here she used a German doll called Bild Lily as an inspiration.
But she was named for her daughter, right?
Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Yeah. Hey, we haven't even mentioned the blue-haired sassy sidekick, the funniest character in the whole movie, who delivered my favorite line, Mariposa. I can't even remember why she said it, but I love it when people say something like stupid into someone's face, and that was yeah. cool. Mm. But she was a real sassy best friend. Mm. It was cool. A
lot of them so far, so I'm glad. Like this is another thing where like you guys having watched one are like, this is cool, and us having watched 12 is like, yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah, that one of those and that one as well. Yeah.
I'm not trying to be elitist about Barbie movies. Mm. More, I'm trying to match your energy.
You're doing a shit job of not being elitist.
Next time we ask you to watch one film and come on our podcast, we expect you to watch the other 12.
Hey, I love the begrudging energy with which you're accepting our guest appearance on your 15-hour misguided Barbie deep dive. You absolute fucks.
I'm not concerned about you two because I look at you two and I see a lot of myself. I see G&T reflected onto this computer
Which
screen.
One's which?
Who I'm...
You have to tell us which
I'm
one's worried. Which.
Richard is Guy, AJ is me.
Okay.
I think we can both live with that. The thing is, whenever people tell us like which one we are of a duo, we're always both offended.
But not this time, right, Richard? Yeah! Not this time.
The person I'm concerned about is the listener, is the consumer of this 15-hour odyssey. And I don't mean odyssey in the way that we use it these days. Like, this is truly the Greek origin story. This is a similar quest that some misguided hero is going on. And for what?
Yeah.
What will they receive at the end?
Be funny.
How much richer will they be?
Well, they'll be able to hop on our Discord and talk about the episode, which you all should join. But
you've hidden a password. You've hidden a password to the Discord somewhere between hour 1 and 14. You've got to listen to the whole fucking thing to find
it. If you've listened this far into the podcast, let's do it. If you've listened this far into the podcast, say the first person in our Discord to say the word Archer will get a special prize. First time I see the word Archer in our Discord.
We'll send you a Barbie doll of your choice.
Yeah. Can I tell you guys something?
Yeah.
Tell us.
I'm on the IMDb for Barbie Mariposa and her butterfly fairy friends right now. Mm-hmm. And there is a user review that was posted as recently as January 9, 2021.
Watched it.
Was it you guys?
No. Did either of you post on IMDb under the name Diana Marinelli?
No.
That's a fantastic pseudonym.
This is what Diana thinks. This was a good movie with the storyteller being Alina, which is interesting since we only see Barbie most of the time. Mariposa is a great character people can look after since she starts as an unconfident individual but blossoms to be a hero.
It's funny how
this person's been going through and reviewing all of the Barbie movies.
Yeah,
God, I hope she doesn't release a 15-hour podcast before us.
I was going to say, like, as widespread as these movies are, how hard is it to believe that someone other than us four watched this movie this year, you know? Yeah.
Dude,
seems so unlikely.
This is the weird thing, because, like, with our stupid misguided projects into film podcasting, like watching, you know, Sex and the City 2 52 times, which I'd be quite confident to say probably no one has done, or very few people.
World record.
I reckon there'll be a shit ton of people who have seen all the Barbie movies.
Yeah. But you go on Letterboxd, and there's very little rankings of all 37.
Yeah.
Some stop at
very little, not none.
You know what? I do go on Letterboxd, and I do notice there are very few rankings.
Well, I don't want to confidently say there are none. I wasn't able to find any, but there's a few that have like 33 or 34 because they said they were taking a hiatus or they weren't going to make any more, and then they came out with one a few months ago. So maybe people haven't caught up with that.
I feel like no one really got on side with Diana Marinelli's review, but I do want to check in with someone who is at the other end of the spectrum.
Is this Freakfire 1?
Yes.
Yeah, I was. I had this review, but if you want to go through it, because I also went through Freakfire 1's history, and it was very revealing, but I'll let you tell the contents of their review.
Well, the heading is corny. Maybe they could have hired Jodie Benson, which means nothing to me, but I assume is a layered piece of...
Jodie Benson's the voice of Ariel in The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, there you go. Wow. Talk about a movie that just lacked about everything. But I will give it this. They didn't waste a lot of money on animators or acting talent. Although I am of the opinion that somebody like Jodie Benson could have at least made things more bearable.
Actually, anyway. Sorry, it just came to me that it's worth mentioning Jodie Benson also voices Barbie in the Toy Story movies.
Incredible.
Oh. Ah, that makes sense.
Here it goes. It wasn't really good on any level. The CGI was shoddy and substandard. Even to the 1995 levels of Toy Story, you'd think they'd be at least that good. Nope. Second, the story. Haven't we all heard of the poisoning fill-in-the-blank will lead to a better storyline in fantasies? Nothing original here, and that isn't even talking about the lack of character development. Then comes the grumpy-looking creatures that, for some reason, can't stand light. Were they supposed to be evil? No clue here, but they sure don't put up a fight. Even for kids, this was bad. Just because you put the word Barbie on it doesn't mean it deserves a kid's time. F.
What the fuck? Just five because you put Barbie on it, it doesn't mean it deserves a kid's time. What's
5 out of 16 found this helpful.
Usually their trademark is a gatekeeper of quality.
It's interesting. System. So this character, this person, Freakfire One, they are quite a character. They reviewed quite a few films, and I'll just go through the headlines of some of their reviews. So for Futurama Bender's Game, they said, it's getting better, but it needs more Alf, as an Alf from Pog fame. School for Scoundrels, Bad Santa meets Alf. Iron Man, can Alf be an Iron Man too?
Uh-oh.
21, Lisa Lapira is dating Alf. RV, Runaway Vacation. Alf should be in the next Jet Li film.
That's the best one. It's not connected to the. That's
true.
That's just a sentence.
How did they not bring up Alf in the context of this Barbie movie? I'm getting the idea that Freakfire One is some sort of comedy writer who's created an account and is reviewing all of these movies and their connection or lack thereof to Alf, and nary a mention of Alf in Mariposa.
They have 239 reviews.
Smells like a podcast concept to me.
Yeah.
That are just trying to insert Alf into different film franchises.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so we've been trying to stick to about 20 minutes per film, and this is rapidly approaching an hour.
I gotta add an extra
Why
guest.
The fuck didn't you tell us that at the start?
It's fine. Don't worry
it's
about
it. It's fine. They've
What's
come this far.
Hours?
They're gonna listen another 10 or 12 hours. But we do have a couple of things to kind of run through that we've been doing for all of these films. So we haven't mentioned none of these films after the first one have Rotten Tomatoes critic scores, but they do have audience scores. Guy, you've got you got your hand up.
I'm quite far into Freakfire One's review. I've got a review of the 2005 film called Because of Winn-Dixie, which is a movie about a mischievous dog that befriends a lonely young girl in a new town and helps make her new friends. And the byline for the review is, wow. That dog sucked.
Wow.
But so on the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, from a total of 984 reviews, what percentage do we think this film would have?
984 audience reviews.
Yeah. What percentage of those do you think are positive?
40.
40?
54%.
AJ?
They've been around 73 for the past 7 or 8 movies, so I'm going to guess 73.
82.
Oh, that's very high.
That is incredibly high.
Man. Hard won and well-deserved.
That's not true at all.
From the 8-year-old girls who are registering on Rotten Tomatoes and reviewing it as the audience score, yeah.
I can imagine the sort of unbridled passion of an 8-year-old girl who logs onto Rotten Tomatoes and sees that her favorite Barbie Fairyland movie is sitting below
Fairytopia.
70% and being like, you know, this really fucks me off.
Well, I mean, 18% of people are just like, there's not enough Alf in this film.
Fire
so
one.
This was also directed by Conrad Houghton. We didn't, but he should be credited for his work. So one thing we've been doing, if you don't mind me asking, what year were you guys born? And then I can tell you what Barbie looked like the year you were born.
87.
88.
87 and 88. Okay. Because you're born between 80 and 90, there's potentially another Barbie I can give you. So in 87, you had Dr. Barbie.
Oh,
sick.
So it highlighted women in the workplace. Dr. Barbie came with her own medical equipment, like doctor's bag and stethoscope. But because she's Barbie, she also came with a quick change accessory to change from her lab coat into something a little fancier.
Well, she also came with big tits and a fat ass.
I don't think that was the quick change accessory. Also born in 1987, my wife, who is a doctor. So clearly,
clearly inspired.
This toy had an impact.
Also in 87, you have Bopsy, the new addition to Barbie's band. What instrument does she play? Check out her satiny jacket for the answer. And looking at her satiny jacket appears to be a saxophone.
Oh, shit. That's cool. Okay.
And so in 1988, you had Fashion Barbie.
Finally.
Barbie was all about the fashion in 1988. That year, Fashion Magic Barbie had a line of coordinating accessories and fashion were released. It's not a sentence. Fashion Magic Barbie had the feathered bangs and oversized knotted t-shirts that so many of us rocked back in the day.
She knows how it is, yeah. And so do I.
But she's got a Los Angeles t-shirt and it's tied in a knot at the bottom. Very 80s.
Right.
Well, I guess, unless you guys have any more final thoughts about Barbie Mariposa. Mariposa also
I've
being
Spanish
for butterfly.
I've got a lot of final thoughts about this movie. No, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I don't. I just want to say congratulations on making it this far. I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking right. to the listener.
The and single just listener who's made it this far.
No, thanks for having us. And I hope this didn't undermine the pleasure you took in the idea that I was hating it. But I actually, as a sort of drop-in movie-going experience, I kind of enjoyed watching Barbie Mariposa. It was unusual.
Unlike Richard, I'm actually very relieved, Guy, because...
Well, I was about to say that.
Because, Guy, you and I have constantly interacted with each other through a mutual friend forcing you to do something with me. The 9/11 episode we did was put upon you by Tim, and this is off-pod, but we actually met because a mutual friend of ours got you to commit to acting in a short film that you later told me you didn't enjoy doing for no money. So I was like, oh my god, does Guy just think I'm this character orbiting his life who constantly talks to someone else who commits him to doing these things he doesn't want to do?
I've got nothing but time and respect for you, AJ, even if you don't appear to have that for yourself. I did hate making that short film.
We've got to end this thing. You said 20 minutes was the expected duration.
If people are still listening, how can they find your show if they don't know about it already?
You can catch us on hour 15 of this same episode on our triumphant return to the Barbie. No.
You're more than welcome to.
It'd be so funny to ride back in.
I think
Come back in with someone else.
If you go to the Mattel website and look up the 1988 Barbie, Fashion Barbie, that's where you'll find me.
And if you look up the
I to understand you don't want to do a plug for your show? Is that what you're telling me?
1973 Fascist Barbie. That's where
hey, 1993 was Policeman Barbie, so closely. That's what me and Richard got.
Yeah.
WorstIdeaOfAllTime.com is the website. Our podcast is currently watching all of the Emmanuel movies, which are a collection of softcore pornographies started in the 60s, running right up into the 2000s. Mm. Much like James Bond, the franchise shifts through different actors portraying the titular Emmanuel, and you never get to see a penis.
Or an asshole.
Those are the best body parts.
The only difference really between this episode and your entire season of the podcast is you guys have split it up into multiple episodes. We're all watching marathon length movies that no one really knows exists.
With a confusing lack of genitals.
Yeah. That's the idea of genitals, but not the actuality. Thanks for having us.
Well, Barbie doesn't have genitals. She's just smooth.
Well, that's what they want you to think. But if you work hard on it, you'll find a way.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. That was Guy and my guest appearance on Cult Popture's film franchise Fortnights. After this, they continued to talk about the Barbie movies for another 13 hours with, as I mentioned earlier, a ton of special guests. If you want to check out their show, search Cult Popture wherever you get your podcasts or just click on our show notes. They've got a very active social media presence as well. And most of all, they're good dudes. We love AJ. We love Richard. They're good boys. We will chat to you all soon. Hope you're going okay out there. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.